8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Knotfest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Talk to Me here on Knotfest.com. As always, I am Joshua Toomey, joined by the one, the only Chris Aiken. Chris, how are we doing?
We are awesome, man. How's it going over there?
It's going well. It's going well. And we've got the great Frank Fonseré, formerly of Fozzy and formerly of Stuck Mojo, on the show, man. Good friend of mine, old friend of mine, former Primer 55 bandmate of mine.
So. Look at that.
So, yeah, Frank is a solid dude, and he's got some stuff going on, doing some art and things like that these days. So I wanted to have him on to talk about everything he's doing now that he's off of the road.
Nice. I can't believe that guy's off of the road. As long as I've known his name, he's been on the road. So
crazy. Yeah. Now Frank's one of those dudes, man. Like when I heard he was going to be in the second incarnation of Primer that I was involved in, I didn't know what to think. I didn't know anything about him. I mean, right. I had seen Stuck Mojo, actually opened for Stuck Mojo a couple of times, but you don't really know how good or bad a bandmate is until you get in a room with them.
Sure.
And I think we were like one song in and I was like, oh yeah, he's solid. he's honestly might be the best drummer I ever played with.
Nice. Well, how important is that when you are in a band to find that, especially as a bass player and a drummer? Yeah. I mean, you guys obviously click with each other.
Right.
I mean, is it really a case where if you don't click, you know, just as dudes, that it may not even work as a band, where you just can't find the chemistry on stage, or no?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely played with some drummers that were just all over the place and never did the same fill twice, and you know, you just never could get a feel of what this guy was going to do. So yeah, I mean, you definitely got to lock in, and Frank is like a human metronome there.
Right, no question, man.
But yeah, so having Frank on is a no-brainer, and always good for conversation. And you're going to join in on this interview, Chris, so that's going to be a lot of fun.
Dude, it's going to be fun. Me and you haven't done an interview together in a while. I mean, it's, what, been a year, year and a half since, was it Linda Perry last one?
Yeah, Linda Perry about a year ago. So yeah, so Frank Fonseré and Linda Perry. So.
Yeah, they're the same. Very similar.
You know? Hey, you guys need to go back and check out that Linda Perry interview, man. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was fun. I mean, where else can you see a rock star tell me that I'm stupid?
Right.
That was funny. But now this will be fun because, as you're aware, I'm a huge Stuck Mojo fan. Oh, yeah. Was, am, even like the third singer in Stuck Mojo with the rape whistle. I love that stuff, man. I'm a big Stuck Mojo guy, and saw Frank, God, I don't know how many times I saw him play with Mojo, and 3-4 times with Fozzy, too. So I've seen Frank perform at least a dozen times.
Yeah, Frank's always solid, man. I can't wait to talk to him about, you know, all the Stuck Mojo stuff, all the Fozzy stuff, and everything he's doing today.
Absolutely.
You know what else we need to talk about?
What's that? Some good beer. I'm always for beer.
The Knotfest Beer Pit is back. The February installment includes collabs from Deftones and Municipal Waste, plus an IPA inspired by the legendary CBGB venue, which I've played. Good place, good, cool place to play. And a Cigar City Spotlight. The box is curated for the aggressive music culture by the one and only rock and roll beer guy, Eddie Torres, and will be delivered right to your door with additional gifts from the breweries. Also, be sure to check out the Slayers box featuring European standouts, only available through Knotfest Beer Pit. Order quantities of 4 or 8. No subscription required. The Knotfest Beer Pit is the most metal beer box.
Just buy the 8. Just buy the 8. Get, what do they call that? The hangover box?
I believe that's the hangover box.
Buy the hangover box and enjoy that buzz. Come on.
And that's over at knotfest.com, where you can also find episodes of Talk to Me.
That's right.
Yeah, you can never go wrong. I'm excited. They actually sent out a box of this, and hopefully that Deftones beer is pretty good, man. It's probably just like how the Deftones music is to me and to most people. It's just going to be like Spanish Fly in a jar.
I was going to say, what, sleepy and boring?
Oh. And guys, that was the last episode ever with Chris Akin. Make sure not to check him out at chrisakin.net.
Yeah, do not do that. I like some of the Deftones. I don't like them as much as you do, but I'll take Seven Words. That was a good tune. The first album, great. Second album, what was second album? Around the Fur?
Around the Fur.
Around the Fur was good. White Pony was good. Then I start losing.
I think if you like Deftones from White Pony era, I think they pretty well stayed to a formula throughout the career, man. So I don't know, man. You got to check out some of that later stuff too.
Yeah, I probably did. I tried the last one that came out on your recommendation, and I was like, come on, go somewhere. Wake me
Let's
up.
Let's do this.
Yeah, it's a little slow for me.
Well, speaking of someone doing some stuff, doing some things and going to keep you awake is Slipknot and Stone Sour frontman Corey Taylor has right. shared a video of his live performance of the song Home from his CMFT and the XXYXZ Road from Stone Sour's second album, Come Whatever May. It's going to be a part of a B-sides album, B-sides and covers album with his cover of Holier Than Thou from the Blacklist. All this and more is a Dead Boys cover, Kansas Acoustic, Shaken, Eddie Money cover. You know how much we love Eddie Money.
Yeah.
Lunatic Fringe, the Red Rider cover, Got to Choose Kiss cover, Halfway Down Acoustic, and On the Dark Side from one of the greatest 80s movies of all time, Eddie and the Cruisers, and the sequel, Eddie and the Cruisers 2, Eddie Lives, originally done by John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band. So I'm stoked, man. When I saw he did a cover of On the Dark Side, I was just like, 100% in, like all in for that.
Dude, he's always been good at covers anyway. The Burbank sessions from the Stone Sour stuff.
Yep.
Those were all really good. And I like a lot of these tunes, you know. You're goofing about the Eddie Money. I love Eddie Money.
So I love Eddie Money too. Don't get me wrong.
I'm all in with Shaken. I'm all in with Lunatic Fringe. Really the only song I don't want to hear is the Kiss cover, just because I don't like Kiss, but you know, everything else sounds like this is going to be fun. So, and Holier Than Thou was good. I heard that. So
yeah, the Holier Than Thou was really good. So yeah. So here at Knotfest, the Knotfest sponsor Talk To Me podcast, you know, it's going to be great. Everybody's going to love it. And everybody needs to check out Corey CMFB Sides. Get it?
Yeah. Now, is he going to tour this? Is he going to have time to tour this in between Slipknot and the record and everything else?
You know what? I texted him about this the other day, and he has not gotten back to me. So
bastard.
but yeah, he always does really well, like you said, with the cover. So I'm super excited to see this. Plus, I just love a good cover song. I've always been very outspoken about loving covers. I know some people can't stand them, but I do love a good cover.
I'm good. I'm not good with covers albums per se.
Right.
But give me like a cover on a record, and I'm good with that. This might be a little much, you know. I probably all have to listen to this in like three takes because I don't think I can listen to. I don't know about you, but when I listen to a covers record, I usually hear it and then it pushes me over to the original. You know, yeah, I'll hear whatever song and then I stop and I go to the original and then I listen to 14 songs by the original band. But
right,
you know, that's almost always how it goes for me. But I'm looking forward to this. This will be fun. And I'm a Slipknot fan and a Stone Sour fan. So why not? This will be great.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I think we talked about this maybe when the Blacklist came out, but I mean, the cover is never going to replace the original, but I do enjoy, I liked a lot of the Blacklist for what it was, you know, cool takes on the Black album songs. So I'll always listen to a cover and like, but like you said, they're either A, never going to replace the original, or just makes you want to go listen to the original.
Yeah. Which, and maybe that's the goal. You know, I don't think anybody that's not named Quiet Riot is trying to build a career out of doing cover songs. So,
right.
You know, I would imagine that these guys know that it just leads them to the band that they're paying tribute to. So.
Guitarist Marzi Montazeri has left.
My buddy.
Your buddy. We'll get to that. Has left thrash metal pioneers Exhorter, the Houston-based musician, joined Exhorter in 2017. shared his exit on his social media post earlier. He wrote, "With all my love to the boys in Exhorter, I have decided to no longer be a part of it. I have a lot going on and it's beautiful." He added, I'll soon let y'all know. And then Kyle Thomas actually put out something saying that I'm paraphrasing, but it was basically like, "Hey, this band's been through a lot of members over the years. This is nothing new. We'll have you updated soon," which is pretty much the MO for Exhorter over the years.
Oh yeah, Exhorter's been through what, about 3,000 people have been through the band, and I do think that Marzi was a good fit though musically. Oh, yeah. I mean that album that they put out was killer. And, you know, I'm sure they could find another guitarist, but Marzi was a really good fit for the band. And, you know, we'll see what he's up to next. He's done some good stuff. That album he did with Ripper was really good. That I forget what that was called, but that's how good it was. I can't remember what it was so called. But, you know, I just don't remember the name of it, but it was him and Ripper. And it was real solid, too. I mean, he's a good player.
Yeah, I mean, plus he's kind of in that, you know, Super Joint Ritual and mm-hmm. fill in some of the Illegals era, you know, era, and kind of in that camp too. So he kind of fit the mold. And I think he, mm-hmm. I believe it's been a few years since I interviewed him. But I do believe he has some connection to actually like hanging around Dimebag back in the day. And, but yeah, he fit that mold and an incredible guitar player. Oh, and, yeah. You know, you had some, you broke some news with him, and then I think that might be one of the only, or one of the few times I've seen, you know, an artist kind of get trashed on Blabbermouth from something said from one of our shows, and then the actual artist come back and trash the interviewer.
Yeah, which I still don't think was fair. He trashed me hard, and it was like, wait a minute, I didn't say it, you did.
Right.
You know, it was the, I don't even remember what the question was, but it was something about, what was something about Anselmo? I don't even remember what it was that he was so mad about, but he was furious that what he said got into Blabbermouth. And it was like, well, you said it. You know, it wasn't like I made it up. They played the audio on Blabbermouth and he was mad. So I don't remember what it was about. Do you?
Let's see here. Phil Anselmo ripped off Exhorter singer style.
That's right.
Says Illegals guitarist.
That's right.
It asked in a new interview with the Classic Metal Show how he would compare the experience of working with Anselmo to working with Thomas. Yeah. So there you go.
But it still was his words. Right. It's his audio. And I believe the audio is in the Blabbermouth story, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like I made something up and then he came after me. I was like, whoa, dude, what did I do? You know,
you're coaxing him into it, man. You rearranged the words that he said to make him say things he didn't say, man.
I mean, that does happen, or at least it's happened to me a few times where I've had artists question me on shit and try to save face for themselves.
Right.
One, probably the most notorious one that I ever had was, remember that band Drown back in the 90s?
Oh yeah. I love Drown.
I did too. And the guy, I forget, I don't even remember his name, Lauren something, but
yeah, Lauren,
but he said something bad, negative about Korn. Or I asked him something about Korn influence, or if Korn was influenced by him, or how that worked. And he made some disparaging remark about Korn, and it Blabbermouth picked it up. And, and then he came out on Blabbermouth and said that it was lies, that I made it up. So then I right. So then I just put up the audio, you know, and that was years and years and years ago. So when I say I just put up the audio, it wasn't like today where you just throw it on YouTube and phew, it's there.
Right.
It was like a whole process, is finding the cassette tape, playing it into my computer to record it into right. a real audio file or whatever, and then putting that online and coding it and all that other shit. So, but yeah, in the end, he looked like a dumbass when his own voice, you know, proved that I didn't screw him. But you know, these guys, dude, you know this as well as I do. A lot of times they don't know what they say. they're just riffing.
Right.
You know? And they forget what they said, but that's why I always keep all my audio just to be safe, man, because every once in a while it comes out. And Marzi was another one, came up, and thank God I had the audio posted. And I have no ill will with that guy. I'm a fan.
Oh yeah. Absolutely great guy.
Fan. Nice guy. Fan of the Illegals, fan of Super Joint. Like I said, fan of the Ripper record, fan of the Exhorter record. Didn't want to bring him down, but sorry.
Well, something else you and I are fans of is some 90s hip hop. And
yes.
The Super Bowl just happened. Super Bowl halftime show. At first glance, you know, what was your initial take on the halftime show?
It's all right. I found it to be very hokey, which I get. They couldn't really go all out because it's got to be kind of clean and whatever.
Yeah.
And I get all that, but the fake DJing thing was terrible. You know, you're right. Going to tell me that you couldn't throw two turntables that just aren't hooked to anything up.
Right.
Instead, you had to have the white space looking thing that Dr. Dre was just waving his hands over like he was Mr. Miyagi painting the on and off. And the, you know, I didn't like that.
Yeah.
To me, the best performer was 50. I thought 50 was really like the only thing that I came away from going, yeah, really? That was killer. Yeah. And I don't know, Snoop Dogg with the Crip clothes and stuff. I was like, I don't know about all this, but you know, and the biggest, and I know I'm just going on a bitch fest for something that I actually didn't hate, but
right.
My biggest complaint, I guess, is how do you have more or less a tribute to Dr. Dre, which is kind of what it was, and not have any reference to NWA and not at least have Ice Cube come out.
Right.
I mean,
I could see that.
Come on, dude. I mean, Cube should have been there. Cube should have been the surprise guest. You know, they could have had like a garage or something built onto the mansion that opens up and then Ice Cube comes out and, you know, I don't know, spits whatever he could spit from NWA that would clear censorship. You know?
Right.
I don't know what that would be. Maybe a riff or two from Express Yourself. I think that's pretty clean. But, you know, something, you know, it just that part seemed kind of weird to me, is that we got two songs from Mary J. Blige and we didn't get anything from NWA or Ice Cube.
I think my only real issue with it was just how the time was spread out over all these artists, where I could have just done without. It could have been Snoop and Dre greatest hits for the entire time. I would have been fine with that. Throw in Eminem, throw in 50, but like Mary J, I mean, you know, she did a great job, don't get me wrong, but I could have done without her. I could have done without Kendrick Lamar. You know, I could have done without. There was almost too much.
The thing about the two that you just mentioned, man, they went on a long time.
I feel like they did. Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar went on forever. I mean, he was doing whatever that terrible song is that he was doing, but then they had the overhead shot and then back to the front and then back overhead again. I mean, they gave him a lot of time, and Mary J. Blige, they gave two songs.
Yeah.
And she's the only one. Even Dr. Dre. Did Dr. Dre have two songs? I think he did
the first song and I think the last song. They kind of bookended with him.
Yeah, but don't tell me that Mary J. Blige deserves more time than Eminem. Come on. Eminem, probably the biggest rap artist other than Tupac in the last 30 years.
Yeah,
and he got one.
I'm surprised he didn't do Rap God. He did, you know, he just did the,
how about,
you know,
My Name is Slim Shady?
Any of that stuff, man.
Any of it. He did the cheap, easy, you know, movie track.
Yeah, and people need to stop with this whole next year we need Slipknot with Metallica.
Oh, stop it.
It's like, it's not gonna happen. I mean,
it ain't gonna happen. Next year it's gonna be Adele and friends. That's what it's gonna be. They're gonna take the hit from this year and then they're gonna go and try and soften this year.
Yeah,
so they'll either go with like Adele and a bunch of soft stuff like that, or they're going to go something like a tribute to Motown or something, right. You know, and it'll be the one remaining Temptation and New Edition and, you know, Smokey Robinson. I think he's still alive, right?
Probably.
You know, they'll get that. That's what they'll go to next, is something like that to soften the blow from this heavy, earth-shattering thing. But I don't know. Yeah. It was okay. I just thought it was okay. I didn't think it was great. I thought it did what it's supposed to do, which is reminding me how great Prince was. And then I went back and watched the Prince thing again. So,
yeah, I mean, I definitely need to go back and listen to the halftime performance again. I mean, I was at the Super Bowl party, you know, we stopped what we were doing. We watched the entire performance. Sure. You know, everybody there is about my same age. So, you know, we all had the same, you know, feels and nostalgia and things like mm-hmm. that for what was going on. But like I said, I you could have given me Snoop Dogg Greatest Hits, I would have been fine with it. But
yeah,
I think I honestly feel like they wedged way too much into it.
I do too. And they didn't wedge the right stuff into it. How do you have Snoop and Dre on the same stage and not throw gin and juice up there?
Right.
Just as an example. I mean, that was kind of the one that kind of introduced everybody to Snoop. Wasn't it? Was gin and juice.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to go back to, what was that? What was that soundtrack? Deep Cover.
Deep Cover. Right? Murder was the case that they yeah. gave me, but I doubt they're going that route. But
and correction from last week.
Yeah,
I did want to say that I got called out for saying that Lil Wayne did Black and Yellow when it was Wiz Khalifa, but in my defense, Lil Wayne did a remake of Black and Yellow called Green and Yellow for the Packers the year they went to the Super Bowl.
Oh.
So that's where my brain got crossfired. So I don't want to hear it.
Yeah. How can you make that mistake here on this rap podcast that you're doing? Right.
Well, the rapfest.com.
Very nice.
But yeah, I mean, overall I had to get, you know, the Super Bowl halftime show. I really did enjoy. And, you know, the 50 Cent memes were fun. You know, afterwards, yeah. Everybody saying he looked more like a dollar and things like that. But
350.
350.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, explain to me why he was upside down, though.
That was from the video. That was the in the club video. He comes down.
Did
from
he come
the,
down upside down?
Yeah, he comes down upside down to begin with. I mean,
I don't on, remember bro. The video, but I certainly was like, OK, that's cool. He's 05 now.
as a Browns fan,
yes.
Were you happy, unhappy to see Odell Beckham Jr. A score a touchdown, B get hurt?
Never happy really to see him get hurt.
Yeah.
You know, as much as I really dislike the way he pushed himself out of town, certainly don't want to see him get hurt. As far as the touchdown, I absolutely was like, fucking Beckham. This, you know, that, right. That was my comment at my television set when he caught the touchdown and was not real happy that he scored the first score of the game. Definitely was not thrilled by that, but whatever, man. You know, it's funny when he got cut from the Browns, I kind of had what is always my take is, okay, he's not our guy anymore. You know, and he really wasn't our guy that long. He was our guy for what, 2 years, and right. One of them he was out for half of it. So I really didn't have a lot of style. It's not like Beckham was, I don't know, Ozzie Newsome, where if I saw Ozzie Newsome catch a touchdown for another team, I'd have been pissed. But you know, he's a guy that was here for 20 games or whatever. Not a big deal. So yeah.
So as a Browns fan, were you rooting for Bengals or Rams?
Rams.
Okay.
Dude, you can't root for a team in your own division no matter what.
I don't know. I saw Steelers fans, you know, rooting for the Bengals. So,
well, that's because they're Steelers fans and they're stupid.
Yeah. You know, it's funny seeing the Bengals knock out the Titans in the playoffs. People always say you want to see the, you know, you want them to win because at least you got beat by the eventual champions. I'm Mr. Spite. Like I want, the next game, I want everyone to just get hurt. So
I don't want any team in my division to ever win except my team.
That's how
ever. I will never root for the Steelers, obviously. I will never root for the Bengals. And I don't know. I'd rather eat shit sandwiches every day than root for the Ravens.
Right.
You know, hate them. I'm still bitter about that.
Yeah.
And what's that, 20 whatever years ago at this point? But I'm still quite bitter about that.
Well, at least we're talking a little football talk as we wait for Frank to jump in. But you know, at least the one thing the Ravens did for you guys is left all the records and the team name.
Oh, thanks.
So you have to think about Houston Texans fans that absolutely loathe that we have Warren Moon and those guys in our Ring of Honor. And, you know, we celebrated like Jerry Glanville last year and just having Robert Brazil come out when he getting elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You know, he comes to the Titans Stadium to do his, you know, wave at everybody and things like that. So it was like Houston Texans fans, it drives them bananas that we kept the Oilers logos and
because team they're history. In Houston.
Yeah. So,
I mean, we didn't really move. We just gave up a good team for a high school team. It's taken us 20 years to become a decent team again.
Slipknot, one of the most thrilling and visceral musical collectives on the planet, are back with their 2022 iteration of the infamous Knotfest Roadshow Tour. The tour will take place over two legs, both headlined by Slipknot. The first leg will feature guests In This Moment and Ginger. The second leg will feature special guests Cypress Hill and Horror. For full routing, tickets, and VIP packages, visit knotfest.com/roadshow. It's a Knotfest Roadshow experience you don't want to miss.
A cat scratch, a whiplash, a witch hunt in black, sandpaper. Sandpaper, tears in my skin, grinding the stain of hay. Little stone, my heart is scraped, grabbing the soul that bleeds within. Abrasive wounds that never heal, bleeding emotions are hard to feel. Evasive sounds of toothless darling, mulling your primal's disreveal. Something happens when the
Well, guys, let's bring in the wonderful, the great Frank Fonseret, man. Frank, how you been, man?
Neither of those things, but thank you.
No, I you know, I've always sang your praises, Frank.
I'm neither wonderful nor great, but thank you. I appreciate it. No, I'm good, man. How you guys doing?
Doing well. I wanted to start off, man. I mean, you kind of, you know, you come off the road for family, stuff like that. And it's funny thinking back to the time, you know, back in what, 07, when we toured together, you know, I was kind of dealing with that at the same time too, man, where I was, you know, my son was young at home. Yeah. We weren't making any money. We weren't playing in front of anybody. So I was just like, why am I here? You know, so when I got home from that tour, you know, I said, you know what, I'm going to peace out for a little while, guys. And, you know, reading your statement and your thoughts about coming off the road, kind of similar to maybe how I felt back then.
Yeah, I've been doing it a long time, and you know, I still love playing, and I still love playing live, but I've never been the biggest fan of the traveling. You know, that I'm not you know, Dora the Explorer. I don't really care about, you know, seeing exotic places or, you know, all that stuff. For me, it was always about the shows, and I used to think, man, it would be nice if I could just like teleport to every show, you know, you know, climb in a pod and then, you know, like rematerialize for the gig and then come, you know, and then spend the night in my own bed. So, so it just, and especially having a kid and he's getting to be set, you know, he's 7 years old and, you know, I was missing him and, you know, we weren't spending tremendous amounts of time on the road, but still it was just getting harder. And there were other factors too. You know, there was other things I wanted to pursue. I kind of needed to figure out who I was, you know, like who Frank Fonseret was, as opposed to, you know, Frank, the drummer for Fozzy. I mean, that was the entirety of my identity. And I just was like, you know, I needed to figure out who I was and can I just go out there in the world and do something completely on my own, you know?
You kind of stepped away from Fozzy, you know, as a time where, you know, Fozzy after all years and years and years of trying to make it happen with Chris, you know, you broke through with Judas, you broke through mm-hmm. with a few songs here and there. I mean, the latest video, things like that. Like you seem like after all the years of trying to make, I think Billy called it trying to turn a wrestler into a rock star, you mm-hmm. know, like actually kind of breaking through to where people were seeing Fozzy as an actual band and not just a plaything for Chris, you know, you kind of walk away at this point, man.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like it was easy, you know.
Yeah.
That definitely weighed on my mind, but the simple fact is none of that was helping my state of mind. I was still depressed, right. You know, and it had been years and years and years of, you know, the kind of success that will sustain me is just around the corner, or the kind of success that will sustain us is just around the corner. You know, it was always just around the corner. And I couldn't take that anymore, you know? Yeah, it's because, you know, the band is doing well and, you know, it's not like we flew around on private jets and stuff like that. You know, there were still right. things to deal with. I mean, you know, we would have tour buses and they were nice and everything, but, you know, there was still a lot of, you know, showering at truck stops and gyms and, you know, and things like that. Yeah. Which, like, you know, I'm not a snob. It's not like that's some kind of true hardship, but it just wears on you after a while when you get to be in your 50s. And, mm-hmm. you know, especially when you don't have any skin in the game, you know, I didn't have any songwriting credits. You know, I'm not a songwriter. I had no control over what the band did at all. You know, I had no say over what the band right. does. I had no, you know, it was like, when they say jump, I say how high, you know, and it's not, it's not like they were dictators or anything like that. We had a good relationship, but ultimately it was like, I feel like I'm working towards something, you know, or at least I was trying to work towards something. And I didn't have any real control over the outcome, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, you always hear the artist who, you know, they say, you know, well, if you're going to fail, you're going to fail, you know, fail on your own terms, you know. Right. The band that does, you know, that follows their heart and does the music that means something to them, they think, well, if we sell no records, at least I have the record, you know, at least I can be proud of that. And I didn't really have that. I had no real investment in what was going on. And, you know, so I just was like, I need to have some ownership over myself. And I just felt like I wasn't going to have that, you know. You know, playing the electronic drums on tour was something I would never have done in a million years and right. myself. And I was just like, this isn't me. I don't really like doing this. And there was just so much so much that I kind of just in that way put up with and dealt with, because it was like, well, I can't leave the band, you know, And mm-hmm. I was just started to think, well, you know, why not? Why can't you just, you know,
right.
go out and do your thing and be who you are, you know? And I want to start my own podcast. I want to do what you're doing. I'll have a better background by that time, hopefully, you know, but I right. want to talk about things. You know, I think about things a lot, and I think about things that are going on in the world, and I have opinions that some people would consider controversial, but I can handle that. You know, yeah. I don't mind that. Like it, you know, not comparing myself, because I can't compare myself because I don't have a podcast even yet. But you look at what like Joe Rogan's going through right now, you yeah. know, and the stuff that what he's going through. It's like I could handle being in his position if it was just all on me, if it was my, you know, my words and I'll stand yeah. by them. But if I was in the band, you know, I'm bringing trouble down on other people. And so I always thought. I always hesitated whenever I thought, man, I'm going to start this podcast and I'm going to talk about things that like I find really interesting. I was always hesitant because, you know, what happens if somebody gets wind of it in the press and says, yo, the drummer for Fozzy thinks this, yeah. you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, people are asking Jericho or Rich or somebody else, why does your drummer do these things? Why does he say these things? Why does he think this way? You know?
right.
And it's like, right. they shouldn't have to answer those questions, you know?
Well, and even worse still with that too, is especially with Jericho, that could cause him other problems outside of the band. Even, you know, even as bandmate, but I mean, Jericho, obviously he's got the AEW and now he's doing what, that foodie show and everything else. I mean, he's doing other entities. I can see where that could really, and then, you know, lose friendships really fast when you're just trying to be yourself.
Yeah. I mean, there was a, Billy, our guitar player, posted something on Facebook about his support for Trump. And then there was an article in, I think it was Blabbermouth, you know, Fozzy guitarist says Trump was the greatest president ever, you know? And it's like, I would not want to say something during a broadcast or a podcast or an interview and anything else. And then it picked up as Fozzy drummer says this, that, or the other.
Right. You know?
So, So that was one of the reasons too. It was like, I can't make decisions in my life based on how it's going to affect Fozzy, you know? So, you know, with doing the artwork or, you know, I had wanted to do a GoFundMe campaign, which I'm doing, you know, to help me get the art career started. And, you know, I was always hesitant to be like, you know, what are they going to say about their drummer doing a GoFundMe campaign for his art career? You know, what are they going to say? What are they going to say?
And yeah. You're just like, you'll always get that. Like, well, why doesn't he just ask Chris for the money? Or like, you know, you can never win when you try to do something like that.
Yeah. Cause the guy in Chris's position, people are always just assuming that, you know, like he's just like lavishing us all with money or something, you know, and it's like, it's not true. And I don't expect him to, you know, that's his, what he does with his earnings is his business, you know?
Right.
And, you know, the band, I was an employee of the band, not him, you know?
Right.
And, so I just, I didn't like thinking to myself, well, I want to do this out of the other thing, but will it bring trouble on the band? And I just was like, I'm done with all that. I can't think that way anymore.
Yeah. Sure. Now, Frank, you obviously, as you mentioned, you've worked with Rich forever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, since the 90s, you know, you worked with Rich, mm-hmm. whether it was Stuck Mojo, Fozzy, the Duke record, you know, across the board. So how did that conversation go with him when you told him that you were done and you were walking away? Was it a surprise or was he aware that you were considering it or how did it go?
No, he wasn't surprised. And it was fine because if I hadn't, he probably was probably thinking of making a move anyway, because I was bringing everybody down. You know, I was not fun to be around. I was miserable and I was making everybody else miserable. And to me, you know how that is. It's like, you got one guy poisoning the well like that. It's a big problem, you know? And, you know, I think he just, you know, knew that it was time for me to, you know, do my own thing, you know? And, you know, he had always told me, you know, that like, I need to think more like an artist rather than, you know, the drummer in a band. And I need to, you know, look at the long game, you know, and things like that. And, so, you know, we were totally fine, you know, we were totally good, you know, and, We left the door open for the opportunity for me to, you know, play with the guys again at some point. Maybe I'm not going to say never. I'm not going to say it's not a possibility that I could ever be on stage with Fozzy again. I have to think of it as an impossibility now for my own sake. But, you know, but who knows? In a few years, who knows what could happen? I mean, I'm not playing drums. You know, I'm constantly looking for opportunities to play. I want to play drums. I want to create art. I want to do the podcast. I want to do any number of things. So, you know, if one day the things go right and I get a chance to play with Fozzy or Guardians of the Box again, and it's right for them and it's right for me, you know, great. It's just not right at this point.
So that was a question too. I mean, obviously you walk away from Fozzy, but does this mean you've walked away from Mojo? Like if Stuck Mojo does anything, or are you just completely done with all of it?
Well, Stuck Mojo doesn't really exist right now anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that Stuck Mojo will ever exist again. Unfortunately, you know, if it did, if that came around, you know, I would certainly want to be a part of it, because most likely it wouldn't be a touring situation. It would be a, right. you know, or another reunion show like we did in 2014, maybe an album, something along those lines. And, you know, and so, yeah, I've thought about that, but I don't think about it too much just because, I mean, it seems like such a remote possibility, unfortunately. But as I said, who knows? I would certainly not want to see somebody else playing drums with Stuck Mojo, that's for sure.
Right. Well, I was thinking Mojo maybe had a little bit more sentimental value to you than maybe,
yeah,
you know, all that.
Yeah, because, you know, even though I was sort of in a similar situation in Stuck Mojo as far as, you know, the idea of having a skin in the game or a dog in the hunt, as you would say, I still felt a little bit more like the member of a team because, you know, in Fozzy, you basically got Chris who, you know, he could say at any time Fozzy's done and then the band's done.
Right.
You know, if he just decided he didn't want to do it anymore, that's it. It's all it's game over in its entirety. And it wasn't necessarily like that with Stuck Mojo, you know. Stuck Mojo was something that kind of, you know, even though I couldn't imagine Stuck Mojo without Rich Ward.
Right.
But it still, you know, it still has something more of like a life of its own, you know, and a spirit of its own. And I just felt a little bit more like part of the team in that band. And, right. Yeah. And so, it would be nice. I would certainly hope that if that came around that I would be part of the conversation, but it's probably not even worth thinking about, you know, cause I think it's almost wishful thinking at this point.
Sure. Now, Frank, let me ask you, man, just cause this is just more curious and, obviously, Jericho's deal is wrestling first, and then everything else is behind the wrestling, which makes sense. It's his bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
You with Stuck Mojo, obviously, there was the wrestling tie there as well, you know. And were you and was everybody actual fans of wrestling? Somehow, I never got to feel like you were like sitting home every Wednesday to see what's happening on AEW or on Monday Night Raw or whatever, you know.
I mean, to a degree, I got caught up in it a little bit. I mean, like, I was a big wrestling fan when I was a kid, you know, and I loved like Georgia Championship Wrestling, you know, the local wrestling show when I was a kid, and I was fascinated by it all. And when we got involved in the whole WCW kind of cross promotion, I got a little caught up in it, you know, but I was never what you call a mark, you know. I wasn't the guy who like really kept up with it. And like you said, made sure I had to be in front of the TV whenever Raw or SmackDown or anything like that came on. I was perfectly fine with the whole kind of cross promotion in the video. I thought it was a great idea and I thought it suited what we were doing. And, you know, I was fine with it, but I wasn't like overjoyed. I had no problem with it, but I wasn't like, oh my God, I get to be part of like, you know, get to be part of wrestling or something. It's just kind of like, you know, it's fine. I mean, it is what it is. I'm not putting it down or anything like that. You know, it's those guys are a lot, you know, they're smart guys and they're shrewd and they work their asses off and they deserve all the success they have. But it's not my cup of tea.
when you were, you know, coming up through Stuck Mojo and, you know, playing in front of bands and playing in front of, you know, opening for Pantera and all that stuff. I mean, you see the fans in one way, but then when you get into Fozzy, could you tell there was a segment of the crowd that was only there because they were there to see Jericho and maybe not as much into the band and things like that, you know, much more of a wrestling crowd at a rock show.
Yeah. I mean, it became less so as the band went on and we were around for a while and we had a little bit more success and some more radio and things like that. But it was always, you know, it was always much more wrestling crowd. I mean, here's the thing. It's like, it's not like people who are into wrestling aren't rock fans as well, right. You know. Sure. It's not like it was a crowd that was completely alien to going to see a rock band. But, you know, it's definitely a wrestling crowd. You know, when we would do signings or or VIPs and stuff like that, it's obvious who the attraction was. It's obvious who people, you know, showing up with their belts and their, you know, t-shirts and, you know, action figures for Chris to sign and everything. And fine, you know, that was great. There was one story though, I'll never forget, that we did a record signing somewhere. I think it was in California. And the thing is whenever we did a signing of some kind and we'd all be sitting behind a table, we'd always have to make sure that Chris was at the end where like the line would come past us all and then finish off with Chris, you know. And one time it wasn't quite set up that way. And we were just kind of like, we were just sitting at a table and like the crowd didn't, wasn't like filed past us all. They just were kind of allowed to come in the room and they all just went like straight for Chris. And it was like the four of us weren't even there, you know, and we just all, you know, just started laughing about it, you know, cause it's just like, they all came rushing in the room and they all go right up to Chris and the four of us are just kind of like, hi, how you doing?
we're the band too.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that was always kind of like it, that for me, it was hard to get into with a lot of the, you know, signings and VIP stuff was, I sometimes felt like, you know, the third wheel there. Not, I mean, you know, obviously the fans were really nice and they were really good people and they, you know, they knew who we were and, you know, would have questions for us and this, that, and the other, but it's obviously the attraction was, and that's fine. It's all good.
Well, I will say that anything that I saw about you, you know, leaving the band, if it was on a Fozzie board or Blabbermouth or whatever, like the Fozzie fans came out in droves to sing your praises.
Oh yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. I mean, I really appreciate that. You know, I was in the band for a long time and, you know, to get that kind of support was really, I mean, it was really moving, you know, I was really touched by all the support I got and all the support I've been getting, you know, people interested in what's going on with me and the things that I'm attempting now. And, you know, that's really, it's really nice. You know, I really appreciate it. And, you know, that's why I do want to stay out there. It's funny. You know, I'm a lot more kind of open to putting myself out there than I was when I was in Fozzie. When I was in Fozzie and even at Stuck Mojo, I was real, I've always been an introvert. I've always been, you know, I'm not the center of attention in a crowded room, and I don't like I'm not natural like holding court, you know, and being the guy that can hold a bunch of people's attention. So I always really kept to myself, you know, as soon as the show was over, you know, to the dressing room, to the bus, whatever, and so maybe a little standoffish at times, and so I was really. I was really gratified when people would say, you know, yeah, I met Frank. He was so nice and super cool. I was like, oh, that's a relief. I thought sometimes I might come off like a, you know, like a jerk because I'm just kind of quiet. You know how that is?
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah, I was really moved by that.
Sure. Well, Frank, this is, I could be dead wrong on this and tell me if I am. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the Fozzie run, mm-hmm. It was obviously more or less a goof that Jericho was doing almost as a gimmick for his character. Mm-hmm. And then you had to fight for at least 10 years to gain like legitimate credibility when it became more than the Mongoose McQueen original thing.
Yeah.
The last couple of years, obviously Judas became part of Jericho's wrestling persona again. Mm-hmm. You know, and you took a serious song and almost made it part of the wrestling thing. Mm-hmm. Was that annoying to you as a guy that kind of fought through breaking the wrestling character into a legit band to all of a sudden see the material being used again as part of a character instead of being judged on its musical merits?
Not really, because by that point it was like, I just knew that this is how it is. You know, it's like, there's always going to be that element to what we're doing. And I mean, you know, to go, I had the opportunity to go to a couple of the AEW events. You know, when he would come out and, you know, to hear an entire arena full of people singing a song that you had something to do with, you know, that you played on is pretty cool. So right. I can't complain. And, you know, it kept us, you know, it gave us an audience, you know. I mean, there's a million musicians out there who will, you know, smash their head against the wall for years and years and barely be able to have an audience. And, you know, we got to have one, and I'm, you know, I'm grateful for that. I'll always be grateful for that. The whole wrestling connection, you know, it didn't bother me that much. I mean, I guess I would have preferred, if it was more, an organic thing, you know, that this is something we had built from the ground up and people were there solely for the music, you know, maybe that would have been, in a perfect world, that would have been preferable. But, you know, you can't complain when you're a musician getting on stage and the room is full. I mean, you can't say it's like, yeah, the room is full and they're cheering and making noise for us, but it's, you know, there's this wrestling connection. It's like, ah, you don't think that way, you know. You'd be grateful for what's there.
Sure. So with now, you know, now that you've left Fozzy and you have the chance to really build whatever you want to organically, how do you decide what to do first, or do you decide what to do first versus just putting out a podcast and art and everything all at once?
Well, I mean, that's one of the things I've been struggling with, is how to prioritize my time, because there's so much that I want to do. You know, so I have to figure out what's the best thing to focus on each day. You know, like, if I focus on this, I'm taking away time from that. You know, so I'm just kind of trying to juggle it all in balance. You know, the first thing I did when I knew that I wasn't going to tour anymore, you know, I really kind of threw myself into painting, and you know, I've really been enjoying that, the solitary aspect of that, and the not having to get approval for this, you know, this side of the other thing, and just like creating something. And when I feel like it's a finished piece, you know, it's up to me, you know, and I'm practicing, you know, I'm trying to work it all into a schedule where when I get up in the morning and, you know, go exercise, come home, practice on the drums, do some painting, you know, do my making phone calls and corresponding with people, trying to, you know, line up people to do this podcast. So I'm new to all that too. And I've never been a great social media guy. I've never been a great promoter, and I'm having to learn all that as well. I'm just kind of finding my way through it all and trying to decide what I need to prioritize. I think I'm starting to get, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm listening to this book right now called The War of Art. And it was written by an author who wrote the book, The Legend of Bagger Vance, that became that movie with Will Smith and Matt Damon. And it's all about just doing the work. He talks about how his routine, the first thing in the book is, it's all about overcoming the concept of resistance, which is what it is that prevents you from doing the things that you should do, you know, the things that are meaningful to you, you know, the ways that you can allow yourself to be distracted with this, that, or the other thing. And it's actually on YouTube, and it's like, it's a really short book. The entire audio book is only about 2.5 hours long. But it's a really fascinating listen. And it's all about just, you know, just doing the work and not worrying necessarily about the results. You know, he talks about how when he gets up in the morning, he does his thing, and then he goes to his office and he writes until he feels like he can't write anymore, which usually turns out to be about 4 hours. And he says, I don't worry about how many pages I wrote. I don't worry about whether they were even any good. You know, I just went in and I put my nose to the grindstone. I eliminated all distraction and I did the work. And that's what I'm trying to do now, is not worry about, you know, trying to push out of my head the idea of like, you know, will I be able to sell this painting? Will I be able to, you know, make money off of this, that, or the other thing? I'm just trying to, you know, overcome resistance. That's like everything that I'm about right now, is just overcoming resistance.
I was going to talk about the Judas effect on the band a little bit, and the like pre-Judas, post-Judas. You know, you had talked earlier about, you know, if we continue to do this, then the next, that right around the corner is going to be the padded bank account, and it's going to make everything make sense and all this other stuff. But I mean, so what was the effect of Judas on Fozzie?
Well, I mean, for 2017 and 2018, it was, you know, it was amazing. It was like I said in the GoFundMe, the story, you know, for years and years and years, it wasn't necessarily like there'll be this big payoff and I'll be like living on Easy Street, you know, with, you know, tons of money in the bank or anything like that. It was never about that because I never felt like that was, you know, going to be the case. But there was always a level of momentum that I was hoping that we would reach where I wouldn't necessarily have to, you know, go punch a clock, you know, somewhere at a regular job between tours, you know, that I'd be able to come home from a tour and spend time doing what I'm doing right now, which is, you know, pursuing art, pursuing the podcast, drumming videos, whatever. And that I'd be able to do that, like when we would come home from a tour, I'd be able to go home, you know, and focusing on like other creative pursuits. And 2017 and 2018, it really looked like, you know, we were going to achieve that. And at the end of 2018, we were in, it was in November, and we were in Australia, and we got the offer to open for Iron Maiden, like right, almost a year down the road in 2019 in September. And that was amazing. And then we went to Canada and we finished up 2019. And my thought was, well, this is great. We'll take a couple months off, you know, have some rest and work on some other stuff. And then we're going to get, you know, right back in there, get in the studio and just, you know, like hit it hard again and have another big year. And Chris ended up wanting to like not tour. If it had been up to him, he wouldn't have toured in 2019 at all. We did a couple of shows opening for Nickelback, and then we did the 1 3-week run in September where we did the Iron Maiden gig, and that was like all we did in 2019. And that was really rough, you know, because it was again like 2017, 2018, I thought, you know, we've hit that stride, you know, and then it just like they just put the brakes on, you know. And so getting through 2019 was really hard. I thought, man, 2019 was a dark year. 2020 is going to be great. Right. You know, I can't wait. I swear to God, I was thinking, man, I can't wait for 2020. I mean, it even just sounds great. 2020, you know, like right. Clear vision. I thought, you know, and we did the cruise at the end of January in 2020. I was just thinking, you know, this is it. This is what we've been working towards. This is going to be a huge year. And, you know, I don't need to say anything more after that. And, you know, we ended up even playing a little bit in 2020, but, you know, we caught a lot of grief for it. And it was just, you know, like four shows. And then, you know, in 2021, you know, we didn't tour with Fozzie until like September. So we were just off the road for so long. And Rich and I had started doing the Guardians of the Jukebox, which was great. But, you know, that was something we were starting from the ground up. And so I just like 2019, 2020 and the beginning of 2021 was just like, it was almost like, you know, the gods were saying, you know, that momentum thing you were so hoping for, you know, not only are you not getting it, I'm going to show you what it's like to really like to, you know, to run from a nightmare, you know, like run in your dreams where you know, like your feet are sticking to the ground and you can't move. That's how I felt, you know? And so by the time we even got back on the road, I was just like, you know, it was almost like just starting another cycle of this whole, you know, hoping that momentum is around the corner again. And I'm not blaming them. I'm not blaming anybody else. I've got, you know, I take responsibility for not, you know, for like kind of relying on the band to carry me somewhere, you know, to create this momentum for me. You know, that's all on me, you know. So I don't mean to sound like, you know, like a plague was visited upon me or something like that. I take responsibility for it. I should have used that opportunity. I mean, I was stuck in a job outside the band, you know, that I hated, and was like the money was going down and down and down. And every day I left work, I worked in a, you know, I just worked in a restaurant because it was gave me the flexibility I needed to tour whenever that would happen again. And that was just going to hell. And I was just like, I should have done something then, you know?
Right.
So that's on me for not for kind of waiting for the band to rescue me. You know, by the time it did, it was like, no, I'm too damaged, you know, to be rescued. I've got to rescue right. myself.
Let me ask one more thing before I turn it over to Chris for a little bit. But the Sane video, you guys filmed that like 45 minutes away from my house. So first off, I'm mad that you didn't call. Second of all, that roller coaster you guys rode, I rode one time like 10 years ago and said I would never ride it again. It is my least favorite roller coaster I've ever been on in my life. And from what Billy was saying, I think you guys had to ride that thing like 10, 15 times in a row.
Not quite. We wouldn't have been able to handle it, man. When I was younger, I was a big amusement park guy. Yeah. And I used to Six Flags Over Georgia was, you know, where I would go. And when I was younger, I just like you couldn't get me out of there, you know, and I would ride rides over and over and over and over again. Yeah. And so I hadn't been on a roller coaster in years. And so I just couldn't. I was like, man, this is going to be what a great day just to get to ride a roller coaster over and over again. And the first run through was so brutal. I just couldn't believe it. I was just like, wow, things have changed, man. It was designed as like a modern roller coaster. It was designed with, you know, modern technology. So it was designed to be brutal. Yeah. And also you couldn't see, like, it went back into the woods. So like when you were up on the big hill, you know, like there's the Scream Machine, which is like a really old wooden roller coaster built in the 60s at Six Flags Over Georgia. You can see the whole thing when you're standing in line. You can see the entirety of the ride before you, but you can't see the voyage. It goes off into the woods. And so right. you never knew what was coming, you know, so you'd get hit with these turns and dips and everything. And you didn't know they were coming until you were in them. And so after that first run through, I was just like, oh my God, we're going to have to ride this thing over and over and over again all day. I don't know if I'm going to be able to handle it. And we did like six run throughs and Chris was just like, that's it, I'm done. And in my mind, I'm thinking, thank God. Cause I didn't want to be the one who, you know, tapped out. But he had to perform. Now, I was in the back. So all I had to do was hang on and, right. you know, but he had to actually perform the song as he was riding that thing. And I don't know how he did it. I mean, that guy is as dedicated a performer as you will ever meet. I mean, he's able to do stuff that I just wouldn't be able to do.
But at least they didn't have you back there like air drumming.
Yeah, I think I might have tried on a couple of takes, but right. I mean, it was really, really, really rough. But the funny thing is like if I had a chance, I'd ride it again just to see if, you know, if it's as rough as I remember. Because I'm like that, you know, that day I was like, man, I would never ride that thing again. And then a week goes by and I'm like, yeah, I'd ride it again. So
nice. Well, Frank, I know you're starting moving forward with the art. What are you going to paint? Do you have things in mind that you want to paint? Are you going to paint by feel, whatever you feel at the moment, or what are you planning to paint?
Well, yeah, that's the thing is like, when I first started doing it, I kind of have the pedigree. My uncle, who is no longer with us, but he, was a famous artist in Spain. And I have an aunt who lives in South Georgia. She's an artist as well. So I guess I already had it in me. And I was very interested in drawing, you know, when I was a kid, but I didn't like pursue it on any kind of a level, like this is what I want to do. It was just a casual thing. And then, you know, other things got in the way, but it was always kind of in the back of my mind. And I've always had a fascination with just kind of non-representational, you know, modern art, you know, abstract expressionism, abstract minimalism, just kind of speaking a visual language, you know. I don't really feel compelled to do, you know, to paint things, you know, like landscapes or cityscapes or portraits or anything like that. I just kind of want to, I'm interested in being what they call a process artist, which is all about the actual process of, you know, figuring out like how this material works with that material, how this paint works with this, substrate, whether it's a canvas or a wood panel or something like that. And I really love the whole thing of, you know, putting down like an underpainting and you know, maybe putting some tape over it and then painting another painting over on the top of it, you know, just kind of loose and expressive, and then pulling the tape off and seeing what's revealed, you know. And it's a journey and an exploration. And, you know, the first time I tried it by just going and buying some cheap paint at Walmart and taking a few old drum heads and just kind of splattering paint on there and trying to make something that appealed to me. The first time I actually made something that I thought was kind of cool was just like such an amazing feeling, you know, just like that sense of accomplishment. And now I'm just, I would love to take instruction. I would love to study art history. I mean, I'm really into it. I'm, you know, unfortunately I've got responsibilities, so I can't just like run off and, you know, go to school. But yeah, I just, you know, there's, especially when you do something, you put it out there on Instagram or whatever, and people respond to it, you know, you create something that means something to somebody else and they think is beautiful. It's just, you know, it's an amazing feeling. And I remember, I saw not too long ago, a few years ago, the Metallica movie, Some Kind of Monster, and the scene where Lars was sitting there in his living room with the huge canvases behind him that he was a collector. And, you know, one of them was a Jean-Michel Basquiat. I think that's how you pronounce his name. I'd know it if it was written down, but, you know, that's worth millions and millions of dollars. But just something about that artwork, you know, those huge canvases just of somebody's expressive thought, you know, put on canvas. I don't know. It just appeals to me. And I haven't done any big canvases yet. I'm working up to it because I'm kind of developing my own voice. But I really love geometric painting, you know, really crisp lines and sharp edges and contrasty colors. And, you know, really influenced by the early and mid 20th century, you know, expressionists, you know, like, Kuntz and God, I'm going to make a fool out of myself trying to name these.
No one's going to know.
I'm blanking on yeah. some of the names now because I'm entering that area that I haven't, you know, I'm not like an art history major. I'm not, you know, this is all uncharted territory for me. And so at the risk of, you know, sounding stupid, I should probably just like not expound on it too much more.
Nice.
Kooning. Kooning. That's what I was trying to think of. Okay. William de Kooning. Yeah. Nice. So I did get that right.
Nice. Is part of the appeal to this the fact that you can't or won't be able to lean on the musical past in order to grow it, that you'll have to kind of grow your audience kind of from the ground up, as well as growing the skill from the ground up, almost like a true fresh start?
Partly. I'm not gonna say that I'm not marketing to the people who are into what I've done musically over the last couple of decades. I mean, I would be a fool to not at least try to, you know, go to the people who are fans of the music and say, hey, would you possibly, you know, become a fan of the art as well? I mean, you know, I already have something of an audience, but just very recently, you know, I'm building my art page on Instagram. I only have a few followers, and anybody who hears this, if you follow me on Facebook or Instagram and wouldn't mind going to Frank Fonseray Art and becoming a follower, because that's where I just post art, nothing else. And so that's, you know, I have a small number of followers, but I'm always constantly looking at other artists and their work on Instagram. And I came across this guy and was really admiring his work. And then, like, just at the same time, he commented on something I had done positively. Like, he really likes something I'd done, and I had just been admiring his stuff. And like, there's no connection. There's no band connection there at all. He right. just literally saw something that I had done and liked it. And then he actually even, so I corresponded with him and we've got, you know, a little bit of a friendship going online. And he actually included me, and he's got like 10,000 followers, and he, you know, shows in galleries and stuff like that. So, and he included me with some other people, five or six or seven people who he said were like his favorite artists of the last year, who had produced some of his favorite stuff of the last year. And, you know, a lot of this stuff was amazing. And there's my little piece intermingled with it. And I was just nice. Like, you know, blown away by that. And I'm starting to get likes from people whose profiles are really, you know, like I admire what they've done and they've been doing it a long time and I love their work and I'm starting to get likes from them. And that's just, you know, that to get that kind of validation from other artists is amazing.
That's awesome, man. Well, tell everybody where to find you online, how to support the GoFundMe and all that great stuff.
If anybody's interested in looking at the GoFundMe, you know, it's so funny. I hate to say it. I don't know really where to tell people to go up, except to go to the GoFundMe.com and look up my name. I've been sending a link out, but I basically wrote the entire story about what I've been doing and, you know, and leaving the band and trying to kind of start a whole new life. And the campaign is called Help Frank Start Over. So, if anybody, you know, even if you don't actually contribute, if you want to just, you know, read the story and maybe share it, I'd certainly appreciate it. You know, I'm on Facebook at, you know, Frank Fonseré. I'm on Instagram at Frank Fonseré and Frank Fonseré Art. And soon we'll be launching frankfonserayart.com, which will be like my, art/e-commerce site. So, I hope people go check it out. And, you know, thank you for everybody who's listening, who is a Stuck Mojo supporter or a Fozzy supporter. I can't thank you enough. And, you know, thanks for always being there for us.
Absolutely, man. Well, Frank, man, thanks for taking some time with us tonight, and good luck with everything. And obviously, you know, you're one of the coolest people I've ever been around. So I will always,
thanks, man.
I'll always fly the flag of Frank Fonseré.
Thanks, Toomey. I appreciate that, man. I feel the same way.
Heart is concrete. I'm not gonna let you let me die. So damn easy when you're living a lie. Haven't you heard? We rise to the top. I hope you know we ain't never gonna stop. God blocking all the cops. We get love to the fans and we're still rocking. Haven't you heard? We rise to the top. I hope you know we ain't never gonna stop. God blocking all the cops. We get love to the fans and we're still rocking.
Well, a huge thank you to Frank Fonseré for taking some time with us tonight, and always make sure and go check out his GoFundMe and support his art, and, you know, just one of the most solid dudes I've ever been around. So like I said to him in the interview, definitely always fly the flag of Frank Fonseré.
Absolutely, man. Big fan.
Right? Yeah, I remember this podcast was like, the Talk To Me podcast was maybe around for a year, maybe a year and a half, like very early in the day. And he texted me one day and he goes, "Hey man, do you have a minute to talk?" And I'm like, "Sure, you know, no problem." And I call him and he's like, "How do you start a podcast?" And, and I told him right then, I was like, "Dude, your singer is like got the biggest podcast, you know, out there right now. Like, why are you calling me?"
Right.
But we talked about that. So yeah, in the interview where he's talking about wanting to start a podcast and all that stuff. I mean, he's been thinking of, you know, batting that idea around for years now.
No, it sounds like he's, anybody that's willing to take a chance, I'm in. And it sounds like he's ready to rattle the cage. So I'm all for that. You know, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, and like, you know, he's a good talker, so I think he'll do really well, and you know, I think he'll be, you know, a little bit more cutting edge and whatnot. And a lot of people are saying some things that might piss people off. So, you know, that was kind of cool that he had that, you know, just the, you know, realization that if some of the things that he wanted to say, he said, he would probably get a lot of shit from the band that he's in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude. I mean, he can't. I'm assuming it's politics that he would want to talk, or some politics. And
yeah.
You can't do that when your guy has a multi-million dollar career outside of your band. that's the easiest way to get kicked out of it, is to just, just, you know, like you said, to be the guy that makes blabbermouth as Fozzie drummer says, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Yeah. That would be it. You know?
Yeah. It was crazy. Like when he brought up that about Billy getting pulled out on Facebook about, you know, Fozzie guitarist talking about Trump. I mean, I don't even know if that post was even that big of a deal, but it, but just the fact that it was Fozzie guitarist says something about Trump, like blah, blah, blah. It went crazy there for a minute.
Yeah. Everything becomes, you know, today's world, everything becomes a big deal that is not a big deal. So good on him for at least being smart enough not to blow his own spot up at the time.
Absolutely. Well, man, we've been talking for a long time, so let's kind of wrap up with what have we been watching lately? What are our recommendations for the week?
Well, I haven't been watching anything of note other than I'm watching this thing on YouTube called This Is Monsters, which is fantastic. It's about serial killer guys and guys that kill their own kids and all kinds of weird craziness, but it's this series. There's got to be 150 episodes of it out there, and it's really well done, so... It's called This Is Monsters. It's on YouTube. And as far as music, I am listening to a band called Decline the Fall, which is, they have a song out there called Sinister. And think if you crashed two tour buses, one with Nonpoint in it, the other with Motion and White in it, Motionless and White in it.
Okay.
Whatever would survive, that's what this band is, but way heavier. It's like very heavy on those. It's very heavy on those two elements.
All right. And for me, I've been watching that the Inventing Anna on Netflix. It's got the lady that plays Ruth on Ozark. She's kind of the star of it.
Oh, yeah.
That came out. We watched the first episode of it last night. And, you know, obviously I'm going to, you know, Julia Gardner, going to support her in whatever she does. She's amazing. So, yeah. So yeah, and then like I told you earlier, I haven't really listened to much new music, but I did go back and check out the newest from Fear Factory again. And man, does that thing hold up?
Good record, man. It's other than what Obsolete, it's probably the best thing between Obsolete and the End.
Absolutely. Well, once again, man, guys, go check out Frank Fonseray and everything he's doing. Make sure to support him in whatever he does. And just once again, man, thanks for checking us out each and every week.
Yipper.
And so for the Talk To Me podcast, I'm Joshua Toomey.
And I am Chris Aiken.
And we will talk to you guys next Thursday.
Peace.
The Talk To Me podcast, presented by KnotFest.com. Follow the show at Talk To Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk To Me podcast.